Get goodies. The man on the street, the woman on the right, and say it. Information only. Enough chocolate, enough roses. It's a roses are red, violet are blue. Some boy can't fuck with. Nothing sweet like them, and I say it. A bad man, no.
Me know say father God love me. So certain things me not question. Yeah. Like when my father
I think I'll find out one to get out of here.
My mother me this is where me a grow. Them said that them and them living at the snow. Daddy I'm a me a one person you better know.
Oh,
when school fee come and no money na run. A mama do want me see a grown kneel down. She asked father God when better will come. Three daughter, two son with no income. Yeah, get a mother no water son turn gun man. She's a proud short lord her first son born. Only if he knew I said he workless father him run gone. But I love man.
Thank the Lord every time I can't sit in mind. I'm blessed to have you. Mama, you're so great, cause all by yourself you've raised the king. Mama, you've done your best. No, I will do the rest. So leave it to me. There is no love like your love, Mama. I love you so, Mama. I will be grateful for the rest of my life, Mama. Around you, I'll do whatever it is just to protect you. You don't have to say a word, I already heard. I'll do it all for you. I'll never forget that you never let the fears in your eyes control you. There's always food on the table. You're so wonderful.
How a world be responsive? Baby, tell him don't be silly. How a world, I'll them wife, how a girl. Here in G's Standard, it's all our dogs, all Van Gogh.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live. Live.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You are listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial and www.cqut.ca online.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Noah, and I'm your host for today's show. Today we'll be interviewing Tori Pegram, a longtime supporter of the Angola 3, about updates in the case of Albert Woodfox, the last remaining member of the Angola 3 in prison. For those of you who haven't heard about the Angola 3 before, we will first be sharing a short piece by Robert King, the first of the Angola 3 to be released from prison. He was released in 2001. We will also be talking with Ben Turk and Sean Swain. Sean is currently incarcerated in Ohio and as of February 2nd is on hunger strike. Ben Turk is supporting Sean from the outside.
If this was a condition in which you were there for a few months, it might be okay. If not, you know, but if you were in a condition like this, or in confinement with condition like this for up to 10, 15, 20, 30 years, well, it kind of catches up with you. I was in prison, and you asked me what kept me going, I would probably tell you the fact that I was innocent and I needed to get out of prison, and my main focus was to stay as sane as I could in order to accomplish this. Alvin and Herman are still in solitary-like conditions, and both were charged with allegedly participating in the death of a correction officer. But again, since that time, all evidence shows that they were targeted simply because they were members of the Black Panther Party, and that there's really no evidence, you know, no forensic or otherwise physical evidence linking them to the crime. Like I say, when I think about the 10 years in which, you know, I've had time to be out here, that is 10 more years that they are there. When they went to prison, the prison was considered the worst in the nation, and they got people together. They brought in the ideology that despite the fact that you were a prisoner, you still had some rights. And because of this, the administration saw them as being threats. Fearful of crime, so whenever one is charged with a crime, a lot of time it doesn't make a difference whether or not this person is innocent or guilty. They feel, some people feel, and I've heard jurors say, well, this individual here, they must have done something. This is the type of mentality that is cultured. I mean, it is, you know, nurtured in American society. I think while we focus on the condition of confinement, I think the bigger focus is on prison. I think we have to begin to see prison as being a tantamount or equal to slavery. I think people in the United States need to know that the 13th Amendment did not abolish slavery. Instead, the 13th Amendment, you know, if you read the wording, it says slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist on these shores except one who has been duly convicted of a crime. How many people who have been duly convicted of crime but who are actually innocent? Because as long as we have prison, slavery reigns.
That was Robert King speaking about his own case and the cases of Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace, who together make up the Angola 3. Sadly, Herman Wallace died in October of 2013, 3 days after being released from prison. Albert Woodfox remains in solitary confinement, but has recently received good news. We'd like to welcome Tori Pegram back on Prison Radio Show. Welcome, Tori.
Hi, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much for being here. Can you share the good news Albert recently received?
Yes. Just about a week ago, Albert had been very patiently waiting since almost 2 years ago in February of 2013, his conviction was overturned for a third time. This time, a finding of discrimination in the selection of the grand jury foreperson was made by a federal district court, and it has been 2 years since that he's been waiting for the state to exhaust all of their appeals within the appeals court. They were trying to, of course, reverse that decision, and he just found out that they have upheld the decision unanimously. The state then took the final step of asking the entire court to review it, although it was a unanimous decision in Albert's favor, and they declined to do that. So all the appeals are exhausted, and Albert's conviction stands overturned officially without recourse for the state. So that's great news for Albert.
Yeah, wow. So can you already did a bit, but can you maybe just elaborate a bit or sort of walk us through a bit more specifically the last few years of struggle that have led up to this point?
Sure. You know, Albert's struggle, gosh, I wish it had only been the last few years. As your listeners know, I've been on a few times, and I know you guys have been following the case over the decades of struggle. But, you know, Albert, this is now the third time that his conviction has been overturned. It was overturned once. He was retried and again found guilty. But that second conviction was also overturned now twice. The first time it was overturned, it was reinstated on the basis of a law, sort of a relatively little known law, but a really pernicious law that was passed during the Clinton administration, actually in the 90s, called the AEDPA. It sort of gutted a lot of the U.S.'s habeas protections, as your listeners may know, since they're pretty well versed in this stuff. Habeas laws are some of the oldest laws in terms of in the entire canon of law. They're hundreds of years old, and it more or less just allows those that are incarcerated to challenge their incarceration. So there was a revision to those laws in the U.S. in the 90s, which made it much harder for the federal government to step in and overturn state decisions. And so, although the federal government did acknowledge that there were serious constitutional problems in Albert's case, that perhaps they did not rise to the rather squishy standard of the new law that required them to be sort of intentionally injurious to the person. So, so his conviction was reinstated, but it was then again overturned based on this discrimination in the selection of the grand jury. So so it now stands overturned, and this time it will not be reinstated so because we've just completed that process. And we just found out about an hour ago, I think probably you don't know this yet because we haven't gotten press releases out, that the state has chosen to reindict and apparently will be trying to retry Albert for a third time for the crime. So pretty soon, he will not necessarily be freed yet. He may have to actually prove his innocence this time. But this time, unlike previous times, he has amassed, legions of support, sort of from every corner of the advocacy world. I mean, that includes nonprofits, legislative support, sort of state and federal legislators that are in his corner. Legal support in terms of a legal team that's been on the case now since about 2000, which seems like a really long time, but they were not there to defend him the last time he was retried and reconvicted. So although the state sort of stubbornly refuses to give up this fight, we are not worried about this newest development because we really think that this is going to be the main event. This is actually what Albert has been waiting for the whole time, an opportunity to prove to the world that he is innocent. And now that he is armed with a competent legal team and people in the world who are aware of his story and situation, he can quite passionately and quite, I think, definitively argue his case for innocence to a jury for the first time, as it were. I mean, although he's been in front of juries before, none of those opportunities were fair opportunities. They have now been judged and overturned for having numerous constitutional violations that made them not a fair shake at telling his side of the story. So we are, although we sort of wish the state would give up at any turn and stop wasting taxpayer money and, on an innocent man who's now almost 70 years old and has spent nearly 43 years in solitary confinement, we're not afraid of this newest development because I think we're quite confident that he can demonstrate his innocence quite easily.
Okay. That's I guess as good news as that can be, considering that they are wanting to try him again, but with a whole lot more support this time, which's so important, obviously. In terms of people coming out in support of Albert and his release, over the past 4 years, a lot of different groups have come out, including most recently the Association of Humanist Sociology. Can you talk a bit about the support that Albert and Herman have received in the last few years, and whether or not that's had an impact on these different court decisions that you've been referencing?
Sure, yeah. I know for the listeners who haven't been following, and this is the first time you've heard, all of this is rather complicated, and it's, I'm trying to simplify as much as possible, but it is because these legal fights have spanned decades. And I mean, what's important to know and very special to know about Herman, Albert, and Robert in this context is that they are unlike most people who begin these fights. I mean, I think that most people who are wrongfully incarcerated try to get their story out, but it has taken them decades to do so. But bit by bit, they have managed to amass the support of, sort of innumerable individuals and organizations. Like I said, they have congresspeople both at the state and federal level spoken out on their behalf, who have censured the state for their behavior, who have promised to investigate some of the unconstitutional and inhumane practices and conditions of confinement that they've been held in. You have Amnesty International, who has strongly been an advocate in the case for over a decade now. They've done what they do best, international advocacy work, including petitioning and media advocacy. They have, quite importantly, a large team of pro bono and privately funded attorneys that are handling both their criminal cases and the civil suit that the three of them filed together back in 2000. The civil suit is separate from their bids for freedom from the murder conviction, the wrongful murder conviction. The civil suit actually alleges that their conditions of confinement, AKA being held in solitary confinement for, over four decades, should constitute legally cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which up until this point, there is no legal precedent for in the U.S. I mean, you may think that that's somewhat of a no-brainer, that if someone is held in, a 6 by 9 foot cell, the size of, half of some people's bathtubs, that would just automatically qualify as cruel and unusual punishment, but it has not yet been established as such. So that is sort of a tangential part of their fight, but a sort of centrally important one. I will say that the support that they've garnered over the years is absolutely the reason why they are here now. I mean, it seems mind-boggling that they could have so much support for such a sustained period of time. I mean, most of the support has come since 2000, so we're talking about 15 years now, but 15 years with this many high-profile, high-powered people that are outraged and actively speaking out against the case has somehow not quite been enough to get them out of prison. And I think that what that shows is not that that advocacy has not been effective, but just how high the summit is for them to reach, the obstacle in terms of getting someone who is wrongfully convicted out of prison in the U.S. is made nearly impossible for most people. Certainly that it's playing out here. However, I do think that especially in Albert's case, he now has amassed a critical mass of support. He has, a very competent legal team on his side. He has, people that are ready to really set the record straight when this does go to retrial. Again, we were kind of hoping perhaps they would not seek retrial, but, we were aware that the state at every turn has wanted to defend their poor decision to try these guys in the first place. And so we are looking forward to the opportunity to sort of utilize all of the support that has been garnered up until this point to their benefit. And just to add very briefly, they gathered all of the support on their own. The very first legal writs that began their process towards freedom were filed actually by Herman, Albert, and Robert themselves. They all taught themselves the law from their cells, even though for almost a decade, books were not allowed to be in their cells. They had to smuggle in legal books. Eventually, it became legal for them to get them from a prison library. But these are young men, older men who went to prison at a very, very young age, managed to teach themselves the law, managed to write letters to organizations seeking help that eventually got their cases into court and got, other people to come in and help them mount this fight in a coordinated way. So it's a really extraordinary example of what the wrongfully incarcerated can sort of initiate on their own from behind bars.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've talked a lot on Prison Radio Show before many different contexts about solitary confinement, and which, just going back to something you mentioned earlier, so Alberta spent more time in solitary confinement than any other prisoner in the U.S. So could you maybe talk a bit about the role of solitary confinement in prison-led organizing, and especially in terms of the Angola 3?
Yeah, so, I mean, like I mentioned, obviously it puts them in a disadvantage. I mean, in terms of the role in prison-led organizing, I mean, that we do believe that they were targeted for their activism as organizers before they were put in solitary, and they were put in solitary as a way to silence them. At the time that they were put in solitary, it was not sort of the trend that it is now nationally and internationally, but especially nationally in the U.S., both at the state level and the federal level. In the last couple decades, solitary has become the new normal in a lot of ways. And a lot of prisoners are put in solitary, not just for their own protection, but under the guise of just keeping them more manageable for whatever reason that may be, and without regard for not just the humanity or the human rights concerns of someone who's in solitary. Certainly internationally, any stint more than a few days in solitary is considered torture. But in the U.S., although Herman, Albert, and Robert are at the leading edge of it, there are now hundreds, maybe thousands of prisoners who have been in solitary, for several decades. Robert, as you guys know, he's been on the program a few times, was released after 29 years in solitary. Herman spent, almost 42 until he passed away. And Albert was put in solitary 43 years in April. I guess it'll be 43 when he was, originally put into holding under pending investigation of this murder and then eventually convicted of this murder. So organizing from a solitary cell is more challenging than normal prison organizing, but, he has had access to the outside world in terms of being able to write letters. And, throughout time, he's gotten some access to books and occasionally newspapers. And it really is an extraordinary thing that they have had the wherewithal and the personal strength to focus on this. And I think all three of them would say that part of the reason why they've managed not to go completely insane in solitary is because they've been able to focus on their organizing. So I think not only has it helped their own situation, but it in terms of, them possibly being freed and changing the situation for other inmates who are suffering in long-term solitary cells around the world, but also in terms of their own mental health, in terms of surviving this really just unimaginably horrific circumstance.
Mm-hmm. So I think you sort of mentioned this or maybe alluded to it earlier, but Albert's 68th birthday is coming up on Thursday, February 19th, so a week from today. Can you let our listeners know where they could send him a letter or a birthday card?
Yeah, I would love that, especially now because, like I said, this new news about the re-indictment came only an hour ago or so. And although Albert is very prepared for what we consider to be the last leg of his fight for freedom, you know, he knows it might take months or years still, although he has had a state position there. It still is a very difficult time for him. I mean, I think he realizes that this is his last legal challenge. I mean, he has exhausted all of his legal options. And although it's coming out on his side, if for some reason he doesn't prevail, he will spend his life in prison, at least, hopefully not in solitary. We can continue to fight for that. But the stakes have never been higher for him. And I think any time, I think everyone has experienced this, any time you almost have something you really want, it gets much harder to sort of continue to wait. So I'm quite sure that although he's excited, he's very anxious about what might happen in the next couple months. And so although you might think he wouldn't need support, I honestly, as a close person now of his, I've been working on a case for almost a decade, you know, I think he would love letters of support from anyone who's listening to this who has a moment. He will be 68 on the 19th, and you can send them, if you just, the simplest way would be to go to angola3.org, so that's www.angola3.org, and click on the Contact Us page. It's on the main menu, and it'll give you his mailing address in prison. And he may be transferred soon now that they've reindicted him to a state facility, but his mail would follow him. And, you know, I think that the more that we can let him know that, you know, that we know what he's doing, we are with him sort of to the end of this fight, and that that we believe in our hearts that he will prevail and justice will prevail, you know, even if you don't believe that, just giving him any sort of statement of support would be really helpful right now.
Thank you so much. That's all for my questions. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, that's it. I mean, except that the next couple weeks and months could be pretty busy. They have just recently set a tentative trial date for the civil case. It's in November of this year. That may be postponed slightly, but we probably won't go a few months beyond that. So within the next year or so, hopefully I'll talk to you again about that, because that is the case that would set a precedent for other inmates in this circumstance. So that is, you know, Herman's legacy now that he's passed away, and certainly Robert and Albert's living legacy. I mean, they have always expressed that they want to secure their own freedom, but above all, they want to make sure that no one in any country, but especially in America, ever has to sort of endure what they have managed to survive. So the sooner we can put reasonable limits on solitary and ban the use of long-term solitary as they've experienced, the better. And that's what that case will do. So in addition to letting you know, hopefully when Albert gets out, we will also be keeping you all updated as to how their legal legacy is laid down. And hopefully, you know, 5 years from now, be talking about scores of others who are able to use that precedent to challenge their own wrongful long-term solitary confinement.
Absolutely. And yeah, we'll definitely be keeping in touch and trying to broadcast updates as they happen. Thanks so much for coming on Prison Radio Show again, Tori.
Yes, thank you too. Have a good day.
Okay, bye.
Out. This Warren G, you know what I'm saying? Chilling with my man Slick Rick, you know? And we're gonna give y'all a little tale about that jail stuff, you know? So, Rick, why don't you run it, homie?
In the stomach,
but I'm innocent.
Lord played with, he wasn't having any pity.
Now in razor blade city.
Cries opposed to situation, seen mad eyes opposed, tries arose.
Hey, yo, money, what size are those?
Neither phone me two, another sprang up.
To gang up.
On this kid, house in the phone like he didn't know how to hang up.
Would be hard though, up to a minute or so, and then yells, time on
it. When you get your commissary by this and that, or else I'm gonna.
my so won't stay off.
Extort, figure I safe way off.
Feel the death.
You ain't protecting me.
Forgot today's my day off.
On my head and drift, assume away is knots and cars.
Instead of sitting here accumulating cuts and scars behind bars.
This time it happens every day.
And all the hoes off. How's the watch?
And Donna took all of the clothes off.
How it goes, it's for my close figure telling.
Every night it seemed like mice begin and out of selling.
Still ain't home.
Back on the hook, seen a bunch of kids look.
Miss outdoors, never know what you have until it's took.
And in track, moment you fear,
all of that.
Quote snaps.
So in the cell, did the exercises of rope.
I be a bigger star than you, though never heard of it.
Takes my raps to read aloud.
I wanted to murder it.
Just kidding, no offense of it.
Finally, he ended.
Case dismissed, but your honor,
DA kindly prevented it.
He told the judge, don't free him, this brother trigger wars.
And now that's sad because I refuse to watch, I'm giant.
So hold ahead, drift, assume away in knots and cars.
Instead of sitting here accumulating cuts and scars behind bars.
This time it happens every day.
Melee, and disturbances of the peace.
What fighting? Tripsio.
The rest he might scare, but I couldn't squeal.
I was like, officer, that's right there.
Now if he ain't get me, his friends will
need it.
He turned, I had to stab him in the eye with a pistol.
Stay the shock, he made a yell, I said,
now what you want, traitor?
CO puts me in the bin.
I say about a month later,
back in population, didn't matter that his friend's tense.
The phone fridge, the years added to the sentence, still chilling and all of that.
And I escaped when I didn't think so. They'll hit the cell because they made a rape attempt.
Thank goodness, failed.
For the next, he wailed out, here go the CO.
Ricky Walters, pack up, you bailed out.
The CO couldn't see the rape, the kid'll snitch, mass figure.
Fast trigger, you'll be back, you little...
Au revoir. To date the sluts and stars,
at least for now.
No more accumulating cuts and scars behind bars.
This time it happens
every day.
Join Kupreg McGill and the Student Society of McGill University for the 10-year anniversary of Social Justice Days.
Social Justice Days is 3 days of workshops, film screenings, and art intended to stimulate an alternative political culture and offer people concrete opportunities to get active in their global community.
This year's events include a screening of the film Pride, a workshop on accessibility and ableism in activist communities, and a discussion of the effects of police brutality on non-status youth in Montreal.
We especially want to invite you to the third edition of the self-love cabaret, L'amour se conjugue à la première personne. Come to Café Lartare at 7000 Avenue du Parc on Saturday, February 14th at 7 p.m. to celebrate Valentine's Day with us. Again, that's 7000 Avenue du Parc on Saturday, February 14th at 7 p.m.
The full schedule for Social Justice Days is available at qpergmcgill.org/socialjusticedays.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
The time is presently 5:32, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
Hey, boy, you want to buy a cell phone? 500 minutes, bro. Come on, man. $5. Why you can get it for $5?
I told you.
You always messing it up.
Well, give me my Metro card.
Locked up, they won't let me out. And I had a long day in court, stress me out. Won't give me a bail, it can't get me out. Now I'm headed to the county, gotta do a bid here. I'm used to living luxurious, I don't wanna live here. The walls is gray, the clothes is orange. The phones is broke, the food is garbage. A lot of niggas is living with these circumstances. SP's the same, I still murk your manses. Drug money, the rap money, work advances. Ran and told I should have murked the Kansas. Got popped for a murder attempt. Knocked me on D block when I was burning the hemp. Had a brick in the stash, hope they don't take it to a further extent. Locked up and they won't let me out. When I hit my cell block, know the threat be out.
I'm steady trying to find the motive. Why do what I do? Freedom ain't getting no closer. No matter how far I go,
registration. Cops patrolling. Now they don't stop me and I get locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
I'm locked up.
They won't let me out. No.
Our next interview is with Sean Swain, who is currently incarcerated in the state of Ohio. Sean is an outspoken anarchist prisoner who recently had his video visits cut and launched a hunger strike in response. Sean, welcome to the Prison Radio Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell our listeners more about why you went on hunger strike starting on February 2nd?
Well, first off, I have to say this, that it's always been my position that hunger strikes are really stupid.
And
I say that because more often than not, you hurt yourself and you don't really accomplish anything. But the position that I'm in right now, I'm at Ohio's Supermax facility, and I really don't have any other means at my disposal other than the hunger strike and then more recently, refusing blood pressure medication. The situation that I'm in is that prison officials at every turn, whenever they introduce any kind of new media available at to other prisoners at my security level, they always seem to find some contrivance in order to stop specifically just me from ever accessing that technology. Most recently, it's been the video visits that a friend of mine, Ben Turk, attempted to establish.
So, what's happened since you've been on hunger strike?
Well, it's curious. The state of Ohio has these flaming hoops that you have to jump through in order for them to recognize your resistance to them. In particular, you have to refuse 9 consecutive meals in their entirety, and then they will come and talk to you. And essentially, what they do is they tell you they're going to throw you in the hole, which then limits your contact with the outside world, which completely diminishes your ability to continue the hunger strike with any kind of success. So when they came to talk to me and told me that they were going to throw me in the hole for hunger striking, I said, well, then I'll just start accepting the meals. So I have to accept the tray, which then negates the hunger strike according to their definition, so they can continue saying I'm not on a hunger strike as if that's going to put calories in my system. We're dealing with a pathology when we're dealing with prison hierarchs. So that was the first thing. You know, they actually pressure and coerce you out of engaging in the hunger strike as they define it. After that, this is a couple of days ago, I refused blood pressure meds. And it appears as though prison officials only have 2 speeds. The first speed is, we don't care at all, and we're going to ignore you.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
And the second speed is, everybody is paying attention to you at all times. And today, they went from the first speed to the second speed. We started off the day at the first speed of nobody caring, and we ended the day with everybody paying attention, including the warden and deputy wardens, you know, regarding the blood pressure. They still don't care if I'm eating.
Yeah. Can you, I guess this is for both of you, Ben and Sean, can you talk a bit more about what's been happening when folks outside call the ODRC officials in support of you, Sean?
For me, I can't really. It's odd because you don't see anything happen. You don't see anything happen, and then suddenly there's a flurry of everything happening. I think Ben can probably speak to the difference in their responses when you reach a certain threshold in terms of numbers of people calling. I think he can probably speak to that better than I can.
Yeah, it's been
We've been doing call-in, like, you know, call-in actions all week, and the prison officials have just kind of passed the buck a lot. Like, the warden said that it was this investigator, then we called the investigator, and he said he can't answer any questions, we should talk to this lawyer. And then the lawyer, like, was perfectly willing to talk to people for a really long time, but not say anything, because he's, like, a lawyer, and that's what they do. And so that was, like, a frustrating period where everything was kind of stalled. And so starting yesterday, I just went through all of the possible people to call, from central office to the elected officials on the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee, to, you know, various levels of the ODRC, including the warden at OSP, and just put all their numbers up and encouraged people to call whoever they had the time and the energy to call. And that seems to have actually got results.
Okay. So I guess that goes back to kind of the one and two speeds thing that Sean was mentioning earlier. Sean, you mentioned when you first came on the show that you feel that hunger strikes, I think the word you used was stupid, but you've called it reformist as well. Can you talk a bit more about that, or why you feel that they're, why you're critical of hunger strikes, I guess?
And again, I'm not critical of anybody who's resisting.
Sure.
By doing whatever it is that they can do. If hunger striking is all they have, then you know, I'm down with them. But hunger strikes in particular, what you're actually doing, you're recognizing the authority of the authorities. You're asking them to give you the crumbs off the table, you know. So in that sense, you are then engaging the authorities as the authorities, and you're just asking them to exercise the power they possess in a new and different way that's more advantageous to you. And the reason I take issue with that is because prison authorities and state authorities, at least by my thinking, have no right to exist as authorities to begin with. I didn't select them to rule me, so I would prefer a kind of direct action, if it's available to me, in order to meet them face to face and eye to eye, as equals, rather than as the ruled appealing to the ruler.
Totally. How can our listeners support your hunger strike? Given that
that's something probably that Ben can get to a little better, because he knows what's happening in terms of the website and all of that. But I would say go to seanswain.org, and there's probably all kinds of information there for anybody who wants to plug into that, and they can get in touch with Ben.
Yeah, there's the kind of top post at seanswain.org is a list. We're kind of, like I said, taking a shotgun approach because they won't
tell
us.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
The officials won't tell us what what's going on or who to call or how to get this issue resolved, so we're just kind of calling everybody. So on that post, there's a list of over a dozen different phone numbers and people to contact, including emails, and that seems to be getting results. Just kind of go wherever you want on there. And there's different scripts for different people and descriptions of who they are and how they relate to the issue.
Awesome. Thanks, Will. And we'll try and post that on our website as well. Do either of you have anything else you want to add?
Ben?
No, I'm not. I cede the floor to you, Sean.
I'd like to thank people. There's something very, very liberatory and something very, very inspiring when there are people who have never seen my face, who don't know me, but they allow me to be human to them. It just shows how little power that prison officials and governments generally have, because they can't dictate what we mean to each other.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I guess best of luck, if that's the thing to say, for with your hunger strike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Come out and show your love on Saturday, February 14th, for the 6th Annual March for All Missing and Murdered Women, 3 p.m. at Cabot Square at Water Metro. We seek to raise awareness in our communities and in the media about the deeply systemic nature of this gendered and racial violence. Guests will include the Buffalo Hat Singers, John Cree, Vivienne Michelle from Quebec Native Women, Odaya, Lena Palacios, Aditi Sundarakrishnan from South Asian Women's Community Center, Karine Megriani from Maison Passage, and others. This event is part of the Center for Gender Advocacy's annual event series, Thick Skin, Reflections on Race, Gender, and Political Resistance. You can find more information at genderadvocacy.org or missingjustice.ca. Again, it is Saturday, February 14th, 3 p.m. at Cabot Square. See you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
The closing event for the Month Against Prisons took place last Friday, February 7th. A hip-hop show at L'Alysée raised money for Amelie, Carlos, and Fallon, three anarchists who were arrested in January of last year in Mexico City. The three remain incarcerated in Mexico City, awaiting the results of their appeals after being sentenced to upwards of 7 years in prison. To remind our listeners about Amelie, Carlos, and Fallon's situation, we are re-airing this next clip. And the clip is from The Final Straw, which is a radio show based in Asheville, North Carolina. We're rearing it from them. And in it, Amelie and Fallon discuss the importance of solidarity between prisoners.
I would say that's like the reason why I participate to this radio show.
I will talk for myself. I don't want to talk about for Fallon or for Carlos, but for myself, I would say that, like, for me, the justice system, like, I don't believe in it. And, like, it's whether to be, like, guilty or innocent for me doesn't make any difference because, like, my intention is to fucking fight this world. So, like, it's, I feel that if I would say, like, oh, no, like, I'm innocent, it's like if I would bend in the front of, like, the state and, yeah, like, I don't know, I assume my ideas as anarchist and I don't want to, like, enter in their game, more or less. But, like, I would say that there's different ways to interact with justice when, like, we're facing repression. And this is a question that, like, it's really here that I start to ask myself those questions and to observe, like, what other anarchists, what they did or how did they react. Like, I'm looking at other cases of anarchists in Spain, in Greece, in Mexico, or to compare and to make, like, my decision about how I want to interact with the justice system. And, like, there's maybe two different positions that I would, like, agree with. It's like the one say, like, okay, I'm not guilty, I'm not innocent. And we have a lawyer, and the lawyers, like, try to make that they don't have, like, a lot of, like, they don't have proof against us, so maybe we can go out like that. But, like, the other way people react usually with that is, like, or not usually, but sometimes people decide to just, like, not interact with the justice and not go to court and, like, not present thing and, like, take the responsibility of, like, the act they did, and, like, this is another thing, you know, it's, like, mm-hmm. another way to interact with justice. So in their case, like, we assume our ideas, and we say that we're not innocent, and we're not guilty neither, and we just don't want to play their game. That's pretty much it.
That makes a lot of sense. That seems like a very difficult stance to take when the alternative means compromising yourself before the court system, which is a BS system, but having a decreased sentence, maybe. But I understand choosing the path of dignity, and I respect it very much.
Yeah, but I feel that, like, all my life I would regret it, you know? Like, for me, it's really, like, a dignity, like, to keep my dignity, like, as a person with my idea and my struggle. So, like, my ideas have more value than, like, my freedom. outside and the fact of being outside. Like, for me, the important is, like, the... Like, to be in prison make me realize a bit, like, more what means freedom, actually, you know?
How's your conception changed about what freedom means?
Well, I would say that before I was scared of the prison, and I was, like, scared of the isolation, and I was like, oh, it's going to be very, very hard, and I didn't know, like, it's, like, the other side of the mirror.
Yeah.
It's, like, another reality, but since we are here, it's, like the everyday life can look the same as outside, like, it can feel the same as outside, you know? Like, there's building, and there's walls, and, like, there's guards, but... Like, the discipline is not that much in this prison, either. So, like, it's more a matter of how I feel with myself in my head.
Do you have any words that you want to share with people in the audience or any shout-outs in general?
Well, I would say that, like, the reason why I participate to this radio show is because, like, I don't know, like, maybe last year I was in France. I was in Paris. And I had friends there who did, like, radio show for prisoners. And, like, the prisoners were calling and doing interview. And it was, like, a point of, like, communication between, like, different prisoners in different prisons. And I think that it's pretty strong to have, like, a solidarity between, like, prisoners and especially between anarchist prisoners because we can, like, there are things that we can share. So, I don't know, I would say give strength to people outside, inside, and I believe that it's, like, sometimes we feel isolated with our ideas when we're in prison, like, as anarchists. I think that it's good to be open with ideas and to try to bring on the table, like, in our relationship that we build up with, like, other prisoners to... try to be able to build up, like, relationship of equality and maybe collectivity because, like, to fight against the power dynamic inside the prison between the inmates is, like, a first step for me to build up, like, a solidarity between prisoners, which is something that, like, it's needed if you want to organize whatever struggle inside the prison. So, yeah, just, like, keep, like, the head up and to, yeah, that's it. I would pass the phone to Fallon. Hey!
How are you doing?
Good, yourself?
Fallon Riguet, could you introduce yourself, and do you have any words for people on the outside that you want to spread?
My name is Fallon, as you probably know. And if I have something to say to, like, other prisoners or other anarchists, is that I feel that being in jail is just, like, part of the struggle, and it's just something really normal, and we, like, we don't have to, like, change our position when we're inside, and sometimes it's, like, hard to, like, challenge ourselves with, like, the justice system and, like, collaboration or not and stuff like this, but I think we need to, like, stay strong and don't do, like, the same thing as the state wants us to do. And, cool. Okay, so have a good day, and continue the struggle.
That was Amelien Fallon, two anarchists from Montreal currently imprisoned in Mexico City on charges related to an arson attack on the Mexican Department of Transportation and a Nissan car dealership. The entire interview can be heard online at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. We also wanted to share with you an event that is happening tonight as part of Keeper McGill's Social Justice Days event series. Tonight, the Prisoner Correspondence Project is hosting a screening of the 2014 film Pride. The film screening will be followed by a discussion about lesbians and gays support the minors, and other instances of radical queer and trans organizing around issues that aren't explicitly on gender and sexuality. And in particular, the work done at the Prisoner Correspondence Project. The event is taking place at Chez Boris, which is located at 5151 Avenue du Parc, and it's starting at 7 p.m. tonight. As part of Social Justice Days, there will also be a self-love cabaret hosted by Kama La Macarelle, which will be on Saturday, February 14th in the evening. At the event, there will also be an opportunity for folks who are interested to record an audio message for Peter Collins. As we talked about on our show last week, Peter Collins, who's a prisoner, organizer, and longtime contributor to the Prison Radio Show, was recently told that his liver cancer has progressed and he only has months to live. The Termite Collective is setting up a live art visioning and recording session at the Self-Love Cabaret this Saturday, and you'll be able to view art by Peter Collins and record a message for Peter that will air on Kingston's Prison Radio Show on February 18th. And so again, this is all taking place on Saturday, February 14th at Café La Terre, which is located at 7000 Avenue du Parc, and it's starting from 7:15 p.m. onwards. The time is presently 5:55, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. To find out what's coming up on the next Prison Radio Show and or other prison and prisoner-related activities in the region, check out our blog at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com and click on the calendar section. If you would like us to post an event you are hosting, email us at prison@ckut.ca. You can also subscribe to our podcast. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, February 27th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions about anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write us at The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thanks for tuning into The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Noah, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live. We'll be right back.
Sunday, February 15, The Art of Performing Oral Sex, an erotic poetry presentation takes place, featuring an array of Montreal talent at their most erotic, Cameron Moore,